sausage. I want my Uncle Charlie sausage. I want my Uncle Charlie sausage.
Club hit in the making. All right, he's, that's something we ought to do. I'm looking at you, Scotty J, but this is something that people could do, too. We really need
Miss J.
We really... Looking at you, Miss J. You're nasty. That's a, the consequence of growing up in the 80s is anytime I hear a woman or anybody referred to as Miss something or other, I always want to go, if you're nasty, afterward. Do you even know what I'm referring to?
Yes.
All right. Well, yes. Who knows with you kids and your rock and roll. We really ought to take a whole selection of phrases from the show that mean nothing or that just that are only on this show, like cursing Aunt Jemima and Wenatchee Banana, and just have some sort of a remix contest, you know, to create some sort of a Rick Emerson mega mix. So there you go.
I want my Uncle Charlie sausage.
That's from our good friend Kristen Bowie. It's 503-733-2970. Ladies and gentlemen, let us all take our lives in our hands as we embrace the newsman, president, prophet, seer, and revelator of the Rick Emerson Show, Tim Wright.
It's time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour from AM 970 Solid State Radio. And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
It's time for Tim Riley and his news. It's time for the loudest news in the history of all the goddamn world.
Is that cranked up high enough?
Is it deafening where you are?
Jeez. You betcha. They want to make up for lost time.
this is including the volume from the previous hour.
This is being broadcast in a public address system for all to hear.
All right. I have to... you should turn down your headphones a little bit.
I should turn down my headphones?
No, not you.
Mine are fine. It sounds fine to me.
Your headphones are deafening, by the way.
Yeah, I was thinking I was going deaf, and then I heard yours.
Yeah. I didn't know what was going on.
You had to when you had to leave the room earlier, we were looking down here. I swear to God, as the sound of the show was coming through, your headphones were actually sort of vibrating around on the table like a pair of wind-up chattering teeth.
That's
they were
what
so
they
loud.
For me.
Okay. You sound fine. Here's right. Tim Riley, ladies and gentlemen. Well, anyway, as we were saying,
that lost fellow is still lost. Search crews combing the Oregon wilderness say they won't give up till they find that missing California man, James Kim, last seen Saturday when he left his family and their vehicle looking for help after becoming stranded on a snowy road. Lieutenant Greg Hastings of the Oregon State Police says... They're not giving up hope till they find Kim alive.
And we know that the clock has been ticking for several days, and that no one here's given up hope. They're very determined.
So they plan to drop 18 rescue packages with clothing, emergency gear, and provisions, and hope that that missing man will find one and survive in Oregon's rugged coastal range. In those packages are clear plastic bags, the size of pillows. Also contained a handwritten note from the family of James Kim. His wife and two daughters were rescued Monday. They were staying with the family car. You know the story.
Now, did the wife explain exactly how it is that they came to be lost?
Well, apparently they were just following the sign that said to the coast.
There's gonna be a lawsuit. I can smell.
And there was no sign there saying do not drive on this road.
Why
would you not think it would be a good road to drive on if it says to the coast?
If it says to the coast and it's pointing you down a road that does look like it's been traveled, then you have every expectation to think that you're not gonna end up being consumed by carnivorous animals somewhere in the woods. I'm telling you, man, this guy dies, family's gonna sue the state for everything they're worth for not labeling that road like, hi, this is the death highway, don't go on it.
So they got a map out, and a regular highway map that showed the route. It wasn't clear whose map the couple used. The 2005 to 2007 state highway map distributed by the Oregon Department of Transportation has a warning in red print inside a red box that said this route is closed for the winter, but a Rand McNally map did not have the similar warning, so the couple made a wrong turn, eventually get stuck in the snow. They used the car heater till they ran out of gas and burned tires to stay warm. They only had a few jars of baby food and limited supplies. The family told the rescuers that James Kim left the family around 7:45 a.m. Saturday to search for help, and he didn't return.
We do have this. This email says, there was something mentioned in the story about the lost family that perked my ears. Something that was, and this is like with so many stories we talk about, something mentioned once and then never mentioned again. When asked how the mother kept her kids alive, she stated that she fed them what was left of their food, and then when it ran out...
She nursed them.
Nursed her children.
Yep.
Now, her kids are like 9... and 7, aren't they?
There's a Penelope 4 and Sabine 7 months.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, never mind then. Okay. Mm-hmm. It struck me as bizarre. All right. So the dad, they found his pants, right?
Well, they found a pair of pants.
A pair of pants, but they think it was his.
They think they were his.
All right.
So that's that. They did have laptop computers. There was speculation that as his friends go, he was such a techie that probably he planned a route using a map generated by internet service.
And maybe. I mean, or he might have had a GPS. The thing, you know, and look, I use that. I have the TomTom GPS, which I love a lot. I think it was fantastic. But I don't really know that I would necessarily rely on it to get me through the middle of a deep, dark thicket somewhere.
I would never leave the I-5.
No, I stay in my home and speak to no one. That really, look, I'm just saying I don't mean to be morbid or to make light of what is obviously a tragic situation.
He could be very fine.
He's not fine.
We don't know that.
Well, I mean, look, he may be alive. He's not fine. As fine as fine can be. As fine as you can be without being as fine as you can be not be dead.
There are a lot of known unknowns at the moment.
There are indeed, Tim Riley. There are indeed. We were talking about the camping last week and so forth. That's what I'm saying, man. This is exactly what we were talking about last week when I was at the camping. You go out there and you're taking your life in your hands. So.
Well, and if you see the first, you know, bits of snow, wouldn't you turn around?
Yes.
Especially if you're from California.
Yes, yes. I thought people from California were afeard of the snow. I didn't think that they would. I thought that they were. In-laws, who lived in Burbank until recently. Burbank is not a snow-filled place, by the way. So when my in-laws moved, they were driving from Burbank to Provo. And they were doing this, I don't know, in like October, November. And they described driving along the road. And I know this sounds like a country mouse, city mouse kind of thing. But they're driving along the road. And Laura's aunt describes looking into the path of the headlights and seeing what she believed to be billions of gnats. And she couldn't figure out why the gnats were attacking the car. And, of course, it's goddamn snow. But she'd never seen snow before and didn't know what it looked like. So, if you're from California, you don't... Sitting there mesmerized. Drawn in by the hypnotic pattern of the snow to their doom. It just seems like... I mean, Laura goes camping and she goes hiking in the winter sometimes. And she'll... verbally beaten into her. I have punched her with my words and told her that, like, to stay on the trail, stay on the path. If you think something is dangerous, don't go on it. And for the love of God, it's sort of like...
if you don't see any other cars, chances are you're going the wrong way.
That, if you drive in a heavily populated state like this, and even some of the outlying areas, a lot of people who live out there, if you don't see a car for like a good 15, 20, you have made a mistake. That is nature's way of saying, abandon all hope, ye who enter here. But it's sort of, it's like couples who have some sort of an arrangement about whatever happens when you're on your business trip to New Jersey is whatever happens, and I don't want to know about. So it is with Laura when she hikes. I'm like, you know, if you have to ford some stream, you know, where you're like having to make a rope out of like your underwear and use it to swing across a ravine somewhere, so avoiding doom. Just don't tell me about it. Just come home and you're alive, and that's fine. I don't need to know how many times you were nearly mauled by bears while you're on Mount Rainier. Just spare me, because then all I do is sit and stress out about it whenever she's gone. All right. Well, in any event, so let's hope that guy's alive. But here's Tim Riley.
Time for the battle watch.
Here's your battle watch for Wednesday on the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
I want you to remember that no bastard ever won war by dying for his country. He won it by making the other poor dumb bastard die for his country.
Get down.
So the Iraqi study Geezer group is done with their report.
Just sitting there expelling dust into the air.
And their skin is just sagging more by the moment.
It's got to be...
Lots of saggy old bodies and wrinkles.
It's got to be like that woman in that movie Brazil where you just put a foot in her back and then just pull the skin back. Mm-hmm. Like the bridle on a horse. Ed Meese, man. People in my generation and older, Tim will remember this, of course. Mm-hmm. Ed Meese was famous for spearheading... for grasping firmly, for grabbing and then feverishly working a study on pornography that came out in the Reagan administration, what, like 84, 86, something like that, a throbbing, pulsating study on pornography, which they then immediately buried because it said all a bunch of crap that they didn't want it to say. So, anyway.
So, he is 74. also on this panel, James Baker, 76, Lee Hamilton, 75, Sandra Day O'Connor, 76, Alan Simpson, 75, Vernon Jordan, oh, a young fellow at 71, William Perry at 79. We have a couple of late 60s here.
William the Refrigerator Perry?
No, this is a different one. He was the Under Secretary of Defense from 1977 to 1981.
His children must be so proud.
Also, Leon Panetta, who's 68.
William Perry?
Panetta.
Oh, okay.
And Charles Robb, who's 67.
Oh, he's the youngest. He has to go for sandwiches.
Yep. So that's he's like their Scotty J.
No one is like Scotty J, except for Miss J. Who would like to see a photograph of Scotty J photoshopped into drag?
I would.
I would.
All right, let's all look at the screen. Are we ready?
Yes.
There we go. Fantastic.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Scotty J in drag clutching a glass of red wine. There you go. And with his mouth open to receive tasty food.
Yes.
Here's Tim Riley.
Scotty... Never mind.
So this Iraqi study group has published their handy booklet. And James Baker says we can't go on the same way in Iraq.
We do not recommend a stay-the-course solution. In our opinion, that approach is no longer viable.
Thank you. Okay, fantastic. And this is what? It's a booklet or like a...
It's a handy booklet.
Everything you need to know about the Iraq war, but we're afraid to ask.
And another coach here, Lee Hamilton. Let's see. Where is he?
Why do all these
names... He's 75. Well, they've been around forever.
Am I wrong, or do all of these names sound like they're almost B-movie stars that I remember from somewhere? Like, Lee Hamilton, doesn't he sound like some guy I used to watch in movies somewhere?
He might have been.
All right. Well,
he was a U.S. representative from Indiana in 1965.
That gets all the babes. You get lots of action being that guy.
He says the war in Iraq is going to cost the United States billions of dollars.
The United States has spent an estimated $400 billion in Iraq, and costs could rise well over $1 trillion.
I am loud and ponderous. My children don't listen to what I tell them.
Anyway, Tony Snow said the president will take his time looking at this report.
We're studying it. We got it at 7 a.m. this morning, and therefore I think it probably deserves close study and scrutiny, and that's exactly what it's going to get.
I had the report last week. We all read the report last week.
This is the illustrated version he's done.
This is the Iraq War coloring book that he's getting. Okay.
British Prime Minister Tony Blair agrees with the assessment that the war is not being won.
The most important thing is to understand why this problem has come about. It's come about because outside extremists are linking up with internal extremists in order to thwart the will of the Iraqi people expressed in their election for a non-sectarian government and a non-sectarian future.
Oh, man, it's just the worst president. This is like a... George W. Bush, for these guys, is just like a girlfriend you can't get rid of because she just keeps coming around.
Throw her to the wild animals.
throw her, and by which I do not mean George W. Bush.
No.
We wish him a long life and the best of health. That girlfriend.
Throw her to the nutrients.
Throw her directly into harm's way. That was the best call we've ever received.
I think so.
That call, I'm not trying to discourage other people from sharing their thoughts.
It makes it all worthwhile.
Those are the moments where you know that you're doing the right thing in this business. When a guy calls in and talks about throwing his girlfriend to wild animals so he himself can survive, and then he never answers the phone again as she calls him undoubtedly from some reconstructive surgery ward, calling through the hole in her face.
I'm getting my new eye next week. I hope he can stop by and visit.
Patty, is that you? You know, and it's just a lot of, I gotta go, you know, yeah. Genius.
What is it, want some more mush? Wiggle your right finger.
Okay. I'm sorry, I'm gonna keep it together.
And now it's time to get back to the more important things of state.
All right. Are we done with the battle?
Oh, no, no. Oh, not done.
Oh, of course not. No.
Well, we would get too much.
All right. I got Bank B ready here.
The president has received his copy of the Iraq Study Group's handy illustrated pamphlet. In brief remarks afterwards, the president said the way forward in Iraq and the Middle East will be tough sledding.
This report called The Way Forward will be taken very seriously by this administration. This report gives a very tough assessment of the situation in Iraq.
There's no sledding over there.
Yeah, somebody
doesn't snow there.
He's looking at the wrong part of the map.
The president said the report has a lot of thought-provoking suggestions.
It is a report that brings some really very interesting proposals. And we will take every proposal seriously, and we will act in a timely fashion.
Your ideas are intriguing. I wish to subscribe to your newsletter.
It's time to work together and fight terrorism.
The country is tired of pure political bickering that happens in Washington. And they understand that on this important issue of war and peace, it is best for our country to work together. And I understand how difficult that is. But this report will give us all an opportunity to find common ground.
To fire people around us while avoiding responsibility ourselves. To weasel out of situations that we ourselves created.
Yes, indeed. Peace will be achieved.
We can achieve long-lasting peace for this country.
Oh, that's great.
And it requires tough work. It also requires a strategy that will be effective.
And I was just waiting for him to say what the strategy was. Well, it looks like we cut him off moments before he revealed that surefire plan. He was about to announce it. I could feel it. All right. That's the end of the Battle Watch. Tough sledding. There's the end of the Battle Watch. Doing a heck of a job, Bookie.
Americans play to win all the time. Americans love America. We have the best spirit and the best men in the world. That's why Americans have never lost and will never lose a war.
How sad, you know, there's that famous speech in Stripes where, and I don't have it here, but there's this famous speech where Bill Murray's trying to motivate the troops, and he's talking about, you know, we're 10-1, and which is just, was true for the longest time. Not so much now. This email says, pop culture, yes. Geography, no. Rick, you do realize that less than 50 miles south of where that family got stranded is California. Is there a line in the Siskiyous? What is a Siskiyous?
I believe that's a mountain range.
Okay. Is there a line in the Siskiyous where on one side it's nothing but palm trees and fake boobs? Does all of California consist of three square blocks and the Sunset Strip in your head? My guess is that it does snow in California. Signed, he said, best show ever. Steve.
It doesn't snow in places that matter.
Places worth caring about, mm-hmm. and people worth knowing of. Mm-hmm. But they're from San Francisco, right? It doesn't snow there.
No, it's foggy there all the time.
And that guy works for CNET. He just spends all of his time inside looking at CGI porn anyway. You know it's true. So, there you go. So, up your nose with a rubber hose, Stephen Camby. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, a man who admits he was drunk at the time has apologized in a letter for stealing a statue of Jesus from the St. Francis Monastery in New York. Along with a letter explaining his actions and asking for forgiveness, he returned the treasured Jesus statue to its rightful place. Brother James Currigan says, from now on, they're going to glue the baby Jesus so he can't be stolen again.
You can't glue the baby Jesus.
It was left outside the fence along the driveway here with a note attached to it apologizing, telling us that it was a prank and that they were very embarrassed that they had taken the statue.
Making the baby Jesus immobile. All right, there you go. What? There's a joke there about what do you glue the baby Jesus with. It's glue the baby Jesus. Blessed are the... Doesn't it seem like there's a rich mine of comedic gold there that I just can't get at?
No.
What?
There seems to be nothing there at all.
Oh. So sorry. Here's Tim Riley.
And now it's time for Tim Riley to continue with his news.
All right, Rick Emerson will be quiet. Best show ever.
Well, TMZ has exclusively learned that Lane Garrison drank several shots of Grey Goose, that's a vodka, at a party before driving his Land Rover that crashed in Beverly Hills, killing 17-year-old high school student Von Cetian and injuring two 15-year-old girls. This contradicts the account of Harlan Braun, Garrison's attorney, who told TMZ that the Prison Break star had consumed one drink at a party, and that he doubted that Garrison was intoxicated when he took the wheel.
Harlan Braun, lawyer and action star.
Yeah.
Doesn't Harlan Braun, he's got huge teeth and wavy blonde hair, and he never wears a shirt.
Yeah, all right.
We heard something that he's apparently been photographed. Was he just photographed downing one drink after another? Is that the thing?
Yeah, I read this, that there are paparazzi there who were taking pictures of him, like taking shots and passing shots out to other people.
Who wants more booze? I'm going to drive home.
Five eyewitnesses at the party said that Garrison arrived at the party with Cetian and two women who he met earlier at a gas station.
Classy.
Well, he's into the AM-PM crowd, apparently. They say Lane bought a bottle of Grey Goose to the party and unveiled the bottle to a crowd with a flourish. The gathering was described by several attendees as a kickback for around 30 people. Eyewitnesses, all acquaintances of the dead teenager, say that Garrison then started taking shots of vodka and offering shots to the other partygoers, some underage. Several eyewitnesses say photographs were taken of Garrison consuming alcohol. Later that evening, when the alcohol at the party was running low, eyewitnesses say Garrison agreed to drive on and buy some more and took the teenagers along with him.
The phrase, I'm going to go drive to buy some more booze, has just fit into so many wonderful, and by wonderful I mean wonderful, stories in our pop culture. See also Vince Neil.
About 4 hours elapsed, they say, before they became concerned and drove out to look for Garrison, Cynthian, and the young underage girls.
Where was this at? Is this in L.A.?
Yes, it is.
How far could you be from a liquor store? They're on every corner. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, four. Well, it's been 4 hours.
Especially in poor neighborhoods. They're on every half block.
There's a St. Ives stand just down the road.
All of the shotgun shells. After discovering the accident, they drove to Cedars-Sinai Medical Center, where they learned that the young fellow had died. Attorney Braun tells TMZ that ultimately the results of Garrison's blood alcohol test could tell the story. The results of that test are 2 weeks away.
All right. I bet that, what's his name, Nathan Braun, I bet he tells this news and he says, the results of this test are 2 weeks away. They can't possibly be known now. And meanwhile, he's standing there, and meanwhile, there are women on the ground around him clutching his thighs as he speaks.
Was he so desperate that he met these kids at a gas station and gets talked into going to a party with them? What was he thinking? Throw the book at him hard and hope he learns a big lesson. Some of these celebrities need to stop and think before they do these dumb things.
Let's go pick some hot chicks at the Quick Stop.
He needs to go to jail. What a creepo.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, because you see these girls, like, you know, the usuals, like Paris Hilton and Lindsay Lohan, they're obviously totally trashed, and they're right. Driving around Hollywood.
There's one set of rules for the wealthy, one set of rules for the rest of us, Sarah Dillon. Oh, that's fantastic. Now, Jim, what's even more fantastic is that Jim Roop is going to talk to us later on, and I've missed that guy. He's been covering the wildfire, which, whenever Jim Roop comes on and there's a wildfire, it's always an awkward position for us, because it's not that we don't care about the wildfires, it's... Well, I don't, really. I mean, when there's loss of life and so forth, that's bad. But it doesn't really matter to me. I'm in Portland. Just like the woman who was emailing me, upbraiding me for not caring about Iraq. I mean, I've tried to care. And it's sort of like when you're trying to close a computer program. You know, I'd like to close Microsoft Excel. And it just sits there. And then you get that window that comes up and says, this program is not responding. And we are unable to. That's how it is with me trying to care about Iraq lately, wildfires ever. It's just sort of a, trying to care, trying to, nope, sorry, can't care. But so I can't really unleash my, I can't uncork the Rick Emerson brand of humor with Jim Roop when he's covering a wildfire. It doesn't seem appropriate. Today, though, he's back to covering idiot celebrities. I'm only asking this because I want to know for him later. Wasn't the story originally with these 15-year-old girls that they wanted him to go to a high school prom or something with him?
No, that they were all big fans and they recognized him because he was buying a bag of pita chips. And he was so kind-hearted that he was going to go with them to their party to show how cool they were or something.
Who's the cool one now, Daddy? All right, so there you go. So don't drive to get more booze, kids. Here's Tim Wright. And if you're a celebrity and they don't...
15-year-old kids!
Well, yeah.
Good God.
But if you... I mean, but who among us, like Scotty J, hasn't already done that? Really, as Scotty J will tell you, when they're on television or in your SUV, they're older. My thing is, if you're a celebrity and they don't just bring you more booze, what is the point of being a celebrity? The point of being a celebrity is they bring you the booze. You don't have to drive to the booze. The booze comes to you, right? Am I right, people?
Yes.
Here's Tim Riley.
Then there are those gun-slinging senior citizens getting more dangerous by the day. The facility manager of a retirement home was shot and killed after trying to resolve a dispute between two residents in Klamath Falls. The victim is 51-year-old Deborah Chapman, and she said William Parrott was taken into custody. Caleb and Parrott allegedly became frustrated with Chapman's effort to resolve the dispute. They ran to their rooms at the retirement center and got a gun and shot him. It's a homicide, intentional homicide. All residents were evacuated and bused to other assisted living centers till they calmed things down. Police cordoned off retirement home to look for evidence. It's not clear if the residents will return to the center anytime soon.
If you want somebody in an old person's home to be dead, just wait. Just give it till the end of the day. I mean, really, what are the odds that they'll make it through another sunset? You know it's true. All right, we should break here. I'm just saying what we're all thinking. It's 503-733-2970. Sarah Dillon especially was thinking that. I can read her thoughts. It was radiating out from your skull.
I believe that was just Rick Emerson.
Hello. It's 503-733-2970. The Rick Emerson Show continues next. Don't go anywhere. It's AM 970, Solid State Radio.
All right, now.
Emerson, the radio program. 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. In just a moment, Tim Riley rejoins us in the Ministry of Truth. Coming up 1 o'clock, we'll speak to Ed McCarthy in Atlanta, who, bizarrely, has been put on the James Kim story, the missing guy. So we'll have some breaking news about that here in just a second. It's 503-733-2970. Coming up later on, 2 o'clock, we'll speak to your friend Jim Roop about Lane Garrison, who's just the guy that slammed. There's all kinds of weird news this week. There's a guy who slammed into this tree with the SUV full of teenagers and so forth. So we've got that. Let's see, what else do we have here? We have this, Rick. Pleased to note that not all of California is sunny beaches and bottle blondes. Back in the thriving metropolis of Susanville, California, many a winter was spent digging out of my house. I do not mean this metaphorically, I mean it quite literally. Then there was the joy of being awakened at 3 a.m. with the phrase, time to get on the roof and shovel the snow, I hear the roof buckling. Good times. Let's see, we have this, well, then this is more about the guy in the woods. So we were just talking about this, we'll wait for the news to come in here just before we say anything, but I mean, the guy is either dead or is in like a bad way. So we'll go ahead and go to Tim Riley here before we say anything further. This is some breaking news here.
Okay, we're getting some conflicting reports. First, there is a report that he has been found, the missing man, but television station KTVU is reporting the body of missing California man James Kim has been found. Now, we have no official word from the police department on this, so we're getting two conflicting reports, but someone has been found.
Well, it seems, I think they might falsely report that he was alive, but it seems unlikely they would falsely report that he was dead.
Right.
Especially not for two reasons. Unless he's just lapsed into some weird wintry coma, it seems unlikely that he would mistakenly think the guy was dead. And B, in 2006, seems like news organizations are very careful about what they report and what they don't.
And what else is happening here is they had an emergency helicopter standing by with nurses aboard that was supposed to take off the moment he was found. Now, if he was found, that helicopter still hasn't taken off yet.
Oh. Well, that's not good. No, there you go.
So we're getting conflicting reports.
Well, so we'll confirm it later. Scotty was in here, didn't he? Scotty said, well, I don't mean to be a cynic about it, but it's not about that. It's just the simple laws of science, my friends. I mean, you just wander through. I mean, it's been below freezing. How long?
So he's been gone since Saturday.
So that's what? Well, today's Wednesday. Yeah, no, there's no way. Today's Wednesday, man. I mean, it's like 5 days. You got no food to speak of unless he packed it out with him.
Five nights, too, where it like drops down to God knows how cold.
That is 5 nights below freezing. And no food to speak of that we know of. I mean, whatever, you're eating snow or whatever the hell. The guy's dead. There's no way. You just got to call it like it is. I guess we'll wait for the official confirmation on that. But I'd be astounded if he's not dead. So we were talking about this during the break, that the moral is, it's a terrible situation, but the moral is stay on the pavement. Stay on the pavement, especially during the winter.
Well, I think they were on the pavement. But when they turned around in an area where there are no signs, they got lost.
See, and this is what I don't understand, is they're coming from, they were going, what, from San Francisco to Seattle and then back?
Yeah.
See, and I have
apparently they ate in Roseburg before then.
Maybe. I guess, except, so they were coming back from Seattle. They stopped in Roseburg to eat. And then they just couldn't get back. I mean, how far is Roseburg? How far is that from the highway, though?
Well, that is off a main highway.
But, I mean, it's a bit...
yeah. All right.
Well, I guess...
I mean, you're kind of out in the boondocks once you get outside these small towns.
I haven't been...
If you're not familiar with them.
Yeah, and I haven't been to Roseburg in a long time anyway, so maybe it's a bit... Was that photo you showed me earlier the actual photo of the sign?
Yeah.
That says, like, this way to the coast or
right.
whatever? Yeah, well, you see, if that's the case, then the state is clearly not doing their job. Because if there's... I mean, like a wooden sign says, like, coast this way, and, like, points into this black chasm of a forest.
Right.
Like, right into this huge Harry Potter-style forest hole.
That was a forestry road. That was not a state-maintained road.
And, see, I don't even... Even having grown up here, I can't even tell what the hell road I'm on sometimes. Is it where I'm going? And if I'm going, is it just something just plunging me deep into the heart of the woods? And so forth. So, all right. Well, it looks like the James Kim guy has been found one way or the other. The anecdotal evidence indicates that he is probably not alive. So, I don't think anybody's really, really surprised by that. So, we will confirm that one way or the other as soon as we know. So, we're going to monitor kind of the breaking news and see what happens on that. All right. Here's Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth.
Okay, just to change topics for a while, some of Hollywood's most successful women share an unexpected byproduct of success. That being hairy armpits. That was one of the lighter messages brought home at a star-studded breakfast, hosted by the Hollywood Reporter in conjunction with the publication of its 15th annual Women in Entertainment Power 100 list. It's a miracle I hear, said keynote speaker. Maria Bello?
We just stopped. I have no idea who Maria Bello is.
Apparently, she's star of World Trade Center, which nobody saw. In describing her hectic morning as a multitasking mom, during which she got around to shaving a two-week-old growth under her arm.
Is this really a news story?
A chick
from World Trade Center has scraggly armpits. Mm-hmm. Film at 11.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic.
All right.
So that's that.
And who else? No, I want to know. Oh, I want to know who else has scraggly.
I have 2-week-old growth, quipped fellow World Trade Center star Maggie Gyllenhaal. Another keynote speaker who, like Bello, earned accolades for her role in the Oliver Stone-directed drama. No, no, she didn't. Nobody saw this movie.
Really? How great could the movie be if they're talking about her armpit hair?
Mm-hmm.
That's the gripping drama world trade. And her armpits are hairy! Good God Almighty. Maggie Gyllenhaal. Well, I'd still do her.
No, she doesn't shave her armpits.
Really? At all?
Mm-mm.
Ever?
I don't know if ever, but whenever I've seen her... They aren't shaved.
You know,
I kind of idolize her.
How do you? Because she doesn't shave?
Seriously, because she just doesn't give a crap.
And something has to be done.
This.
Oh, you guys should grow it out.
Maggie Gyllenhaal should be beaten.
I like her.
Okay, we're going to beat her at Scrabble. If I can ask this now, is this like does that grow at the same rate as all your like your head hair and your whatever, your leg hair? Like, do you have to do that once a week or like is that like a one?
No, it's an everyday.
What if you're a Siamese twin?
It's like
joined at the armpit.
It's like face, you know, like shaving your face. I'm
sure. But why do you have to do it every day? I mean, that's more about like that's just a feel thing, right? That's just a whole like you just feel weird if you don't do it.
Yeah.
Like nobody's. I mean, not like Nate's gonna pick some. I can't believe it! Oh, this is the end. You know. All right. Well, whatever. Anyway, so apparently Maggie Gyllenhaal didn't. I don't really care. Doesn't matter. Like it would stop me from sleeping with her. All right. So here you go. It's Tim Riley.
Time for the joy of Christmas.
That's me. Let me load that over here. That is me. It's time for another exciting installment of that feature for which I have the bed already. Because we are prepared for every eventuality here on the Rick Emerson Show. No matter how unlikely. No matter how with the thing. And also, I don't have it. I don't have it. Just hold on just a second. Is it in the Christmas songs folder, do you suppose? Yes, here we go. Ladies, it's time for another exciting installment of Rick Emerson's Joy of Christmas.
We wish you a Merry Christmas.
A Christmas miracle given the job woes that shopping mall and store Santas face every day. Santas get sneezed upon up to 10 times a day, fend off children pulling on their beards, and mop up after children who frequently wet their laps. According to a survey of hundreds of Santa Clauses,
A third of all Santas reported have been wet on by a child. Nearly 9% of Santas said children pull their beard every day to see if it's real. Nearly half say children try to pull their glasses off every day as well. Nearly 60% of Santas say they were sneezed and coughed upon 10 times a day. Three quarters said about 10 children cry while sitting on their laps.
Ho, ho, ho! I feel your urine.
Santas suffer from back pain, uplifting children, exposure to contagious illnesses, and overheating in their heavy Santa suits. There is more to it than just sitting in a chair or sitting in a red suit, says the Santa, who's been a Santa for 38 years.
It sounds like someone needs bladder control for Christmas.
Children can really put wear and tear on you. More than three quarters of children who have been good during the year, but only half the Santas believe the children are telling the truth.
Why would your kid just whiz in Santa's lap? Is that some sort of a misplaced aggression thing? If you've got a child that is just going to, the one-third chance he's going to whiz in Santa's lap, why don't you come back next year, huh? Why don't you put that off just a little bit? You were never, no, it was Clyde. Of course you weren't.
I'm not picking up for Santa Claus.
You were the mascot. Clyde has been Santa.
You make a good Santa, I think.
Oh, Clyde is a great Santa. But, you know, man, it's just, can you imagine a worse existence than that? I mean, I don't know how much they pay. I'd be curious to hear from somebody who'd been like a mall Santa or a store Santa or whatever. I don't know how much you get paid for that, and I would hope it's a lot. I mean, it seems like there's only two ways that Santa thing works out. Either one, Santas get paid almost nothing because they're just scraping the bottom of the barrel and it's guys who have nothing else. Or B, it is entirely possible, I suppose, that being a department store Santa is some sort of I guess it's possible that it's like some kind of a specialized field. Like a thing that, because I guess you have to have a certain build. You have to be of a certain size. You probably have to have a certain temperament and be jolly and so, and apparently put up with kids hacking and spit on you and so forth. So maybe you make a lot of money doing that. Because Clyde just did it because he's a fool. He just did it for free for somebody because he's a pushover. So I'd be curious to know if anybody has been a department store Santa and whether you make a good... It seems like there's no middle ground. You're either going to make a lot doing that or nothing at all. It seems like it would have to be a lot if kids are going to be releasing their bladders on you as they reveal their heart's innermost Christmas desires. For Christmas, I'm sorry, Santa. Yeah, that's just eight hours a day. And that suit's going to trap that urine in there, just like that blue liquid in the Tampax commercials. Here's Tim Riley.
Here's part two. A mother convinced Rock Hill Police, this is in North Carolina, I believe, to arrest her 12-year-old son after he unwrapped a Christmas present early. The boy's great-grandmother had specifically told him not to open his Nintendo Game Boy Advance, which she had wrapped and placed beneath the Christmas tree. But on Sunday morning, she found the box with the popular handheld game console unwrapped and opened. When the boy's 27-year-old mother heard about the opening gift, she called police. They took it without permission. He wanted it. He just took it, said the 63-year-old grandma. When the mother threatened to call police, the boy went to his room to get the Game Boy, and apparently she called police anyway. Two Rock Hill police officers responded to the home and charged the boy with petty larceny.
A mother's love.
He was charged as a juvenile and released the same day. I think the boy was never held in jail.
Yeah, the best part is we'll be able to read about this kid another 8 or 9 years after he's clubbed the mother to death with a baseball bat.
I have more.
Let's continue with this celebration of the
holiday. A man driving afloat in the Anderson, South Carolina Christmas parade has been charged with drunk driving after he passed another float that sped down Main Street. When officers caught up with 42-year-old David Allen Rogers, he had an open container of alcohol in the truck he used to haul children and adults on the float for a dance studio.
I hope there were children in the back holding on for dear life and screaming.
Rogers was driving in line in Sunday's parade when he pulled out to pass a tractor on the float. He sped down Main Street, ran a red light, and witnesses called 911. Rogers, whose child was on the float, faces three dozen charges, including DUI, kidnapping, and assaulting a police officer.
Oh, that's fantastic. Oh, man. Oh, does it say what kind of float it was?
It was for a dance studio.
Oh, that's fantastic. Oh, that's genius. And just imagine being that guy in the other car where you look over and there's a goddamn float roaring by you at 85 miles an hour. And then it's then just charging down the middle of Main Street. And, of course, you know, I totally picture him just hanging out of the window like all crazy and goggle-eyed while his child is screaming helplessly in the passenger seat.
Oh, I love Christmas. Here's another one. Oh. Sheila Kearns had a Christmas tree delivered to her home on Sunday. She said she thought she picked up pine needles when she reached down to the tree while decorating it. But the next morning, she found a bat hanging upside down in her home.
Merry Christmas.
It turned out the Christmas tree that she bought it from keeps bats around for pest control, and that one unwittingly hitched a ride in her home. Animal control experts picked up the bat, tested negative for rabies. The woman got a tetanus shot, though, but she's not fazed. She says she'll keep buying trees in that same farm.
Fantastic. And our final joy of Christmas story today.
Police in Waterbury, Connecticut have been looking for thieves who are targeting public nativity scenes. Waterbury officials are looking for a replacement for the infant Jesus that was stolen from a creche on the green over the weekend. Mayor Michael Girardo said he is considering replacing the entire nativity scene, seeking donations from business communities, and kicking in some money himself to replace a small shrine. The set of statues depicting the Holy Family retails at $2,100. Police said one of the three wise men was stolen, and all that remained was the Jesus. All that remained of the Jesus figure was a portion of the baby Jesus' ceramic arm.
It seems like there's all of these jokes about the stealing of the baby Jesus and the gluing of the baby Jesus, and they're just. It's like when you drop your car keys behind the couch and you're reaching down, trying to reach it. You just can't quite get your fingertips to grasp them. So there you go. So there's another exciting installment of Rick Emerson's Joy of Christmas.
We wish you a Merry Christmas.
Fantastic. It's the Rick Emerson Show. It's 503-733-2970. As we're monitoring the situation of James Kim, who's that guy who's wandering off in the woods, and he and his family got all stuck up there by Roseburg, and it looks like they've located him, and the question is whether he is alive or not. And so the Lieutenant Greg Hastings of the Oregon State Police is currently holding a press conference, in which they are... Okay, so he is dead. Yeah. All right, so that's...
The body has been found.
All right. So the body of James Kim has been found, and we will have more news on that coming up in a future visit to the Ministry of Truth.
I know it was unlikely, but I was kind of hoping for a miracle there.
A Christmas miracle?
Yeah.
No.
So going to hell.
I'm trying to lighten the mood. With the,
I want my Uncle Charlie sausage.
Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth.
Well, Andy Dick is apologizing for using the same racial slur that got the ex-Seinfeld star Michael Richards in trouble last month. Dick is a former co-star of the 1990 sitcom News Radio. He jumped on stage during a routine by Ian Bagg at L.A.'s Improv Saturday night and used the N-word in an apparent attempt to joke about Richards. An improv manager wouldn't comment about the incident when reached by the newspaper. Richards, who, like Dick, is white.
What? Richards, who, like Dick?
Richards, who, like Dick, is white.
Today on Maury.
Said that the tirade was fueled by anger at being heckled and not bigotry. He plans to meet with more black patrons who are targets of his remarks to apologize in person.
Michael Richards, I have the best idea for a documentary. Just Borat style. They should totally film Mike. I am calling this idea right now. This is me, Rick.
This joke, copyright 2006, Rick Emerson Show.
I want to just do a documentary that is Michael Richards just going door to door across the country and apologizing to all black Americans one by one in person. State to state, all 50 states. Not all of them, but I mean just...
Like in a reality show?
A representative sample. Where Michael Richards just walks from California to New York, knocks on doors, and apologizes to black Americans who were offended. And then he just says, and then he gives them like a fruit basket. And then he says,
or a Seinfeld-like collection.
And then he signs it and then poses with the family and then gives them a collection of fruit of some kind or a small gift. And then he says, okay, thanks, gotta be going now. And then he just walks on. And you would just call it Michael Richards walks coast to coast apologizing to black people one by one. Fantastic. You would watch that. If there was a television show, if you could go home at 8 o'clock and turn on E and watch 22 minutes...
I'd pick America's Next Top Model over that.
But if you could TiVo one and then watch the other and then watch them both. If you could watch video of Michael Richards just going and knocking door to door and apologizing to black Americans one by one and then giving them a fruit basket, you'd watch that.
Probably for a few minutes.
It's funny, but look, this guy's any port in a storm.
I think you're going over the top with a show, but I think you could make it like a one-hour special.
A one-hour special?
That would
fine.
Be, I would watch that.
Okay, there you go. Scotty, get Michael Richards' people on the phone. You tell him I got his career resuscitation waiting right here. Look, any hand back on the ledge, you know, you got to get, as Jim Roddy will tell you, in Hollywood, it is you get back on top however you can. You get back on the horse, however, you are right. Probably not a movie, probably not an ongoing series, a one-hour special. Michael Richards apologizes. And then it's just, you edit it all together. Take the highlights, the lowlights, any beatings he might receive.
I can
receive.
Just see the cover of the movie, like him going...
Yeah, just shrugging.
I'm sorry.
Sort of like a, me so sorry, kind of a thing on the front. Like, it's totally, oh, what can you do? Yeah, that's... See, lemons in the lemonade right there. Rick Emerson, fixer. All right. Just as a side note before we dive back into the pile of news.
So I guess Dick had been heckling comedian Bag from the audience and then joined him on stage. When
Dick was heckling Bag?
Yeah. And then joined him on stage to discuss Richards.
Who?
Then Dick exited the stage. He suddenly grabbed the microphone and shouted at the crowd, "You're a bunch of N-words."
Dick was heckling Bag.
Right.
Can I see that story, please? Sure. By the way, we'd like to say that we are discussing...
things that amuse us. We're discussing a factual situation.
Andy Dick apologizing. Now, remember when he went on that licking spree at the Shatner roast? Did you all watch that? Do I ever? He went on that licking spree, and there were all those stories involving the words licking and spree and Dick.
Yes.
So, I Andy Dick. There
you
was.
You should clarify that.
Andy Dick's
okay.
Licking spree. At.
Oh yeah.
He at your at the I'm making it up at the Shatner roast.
And that was a really difficult title to keep saying.
He was jumping on the stage and licking the sides of people's faces.
What could be more fun?
There was an Andy Dick licking spree. My point here, though. He said he was watching comedian Ian Bagg on stage. Mm. Dick was then heckling Bagg. Bagg did not like being heckled by Dick. Dick continued to heckle Bagg. And then Dick got in Bagg's face. What is that? That's the weirdest noise you just made there.
That was.
Was that a hiccup?
It came from that coffee mate.
And then it says here, by the way, and I should say this is from the Associated Press, Richards, who like Dick, is white.
Right.
There you go. And as we're talking about this holiday thing, by the way, every time one of these baby Jesus, this is a little pop culture thing. Tim, do you think of the same thing I do every time one of these baby Jesus is stolen?
Jesus.
Whatever. There's multiple Jesus.
I really, my thoughts just aren't that deep.
You,
to be honest with you, my thoughts are more on the surface of things. I really don't delve in.
What am I going to have for lunch? I wonder if my new catalog has arrived in the mail. I think of that Dragnet episode where they had to track down the baby Jesus. Do you remember that?
Oh, I suppose so, yes.
No, but I can feign that I have seen it for the purpose of this radio program, Rick. I can pretend to share this pop culture knowledge with you so that we can amuse the people for another few moments before I have a toddy. There was a famous Dragnet episode where they had to track down a ceramic baby Jesus, which had been stolen from a church. And Jack Webb summoning up that priggish, self-righteous anger that only Sergeant Joe Friday could really conjure up was just sort of a... What I don't understand is some way somebody would go steal a baby Jesus this time of year. I can't really do Jack Webb. I can only do Stan Freeberg doing Jack Webb. But at the end, it turns out that the ceramic baby Jesus was stolen by a small child who just wanted Jesus to come live at his house for a while.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
Let's do one more and then we'll break.
Well, federal prosecutors say a Vancouver man has faked retardation for the past decade so his mother could collect disability benefits on his behalf.
Thank you!
In meetings with the Social Security officials and psychologists for nearly 20 years since he was 8, Peter Costello appeared to be mentally retarded. His mother insisted he couldn't read, write, shower, take care of himself, or drive a car. But a courtroom video of Costello contested a traffic ticket, it seems to refute that. Assistant U.S. Attorney Norman Barbosa says Costello looks like any other person trying to get out of a ticket, retarded or not. Prosecutors say Costello works as an auto body repairman instead of living with his mother. He lives with a girlfriend and has two children. Costello and his mother, Rosemarie Costello, now face fraud charges. They pled not guilty in federal court in Tacoma. Both remain in custody pending a detention hearing.
He pretended to be retarded for a decade?
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive.
It really is, man. I was like, my mom would try to come in to get me up for school, and I couldn't pretend to be asleep for 5 minutes.
Can I tell you, I wanted to bring this up yesterday. I ride the bus in the morning sometimes.
Those people aren't faking it.
No, with the girl who could have been the model for Rosie O'Donnell for riding the bus with my sister.
Thank you!
This woman just stands up next to the bus driver, and she talks. She's obviously not all mentally.
She's retarded.
She's slightly.
She is retarded. It's a medical term.
Okay. And she'll sit up there and talk about her cat food from, like, 39th and Hawthorne all the way down to 12th and Hawthorne, where she gets off. And she has huge glasses. And
is she asking for a weekend show?
No.
Does she prefer Shiba or Little Friskies?
I heard a lot about Friskies. She said that wasn't good for cats.
That's true. That's why you should feed a cat Shiba.
She doesn't have a cutting-edge radio program she'd like to share with the audience?
She looked like a character out of South Park. She looked like a South Park, like, squat woman with huge glasses that talks too loud.
Oh, fantastic. Give me, please now, to give me an example of what she says about cat food. You don't have to do the voice.
There's this bus driver. I guess they'll meet up for spaghetti dinners. I don't really know. Like,
oh,
they,
God.
Can
you imagine
really
any more living hell than eating spaghetti across from a retarded person?
Yeah. And he never.
It's like looking into the gates of hell.
So she invites the bus driver for spaghetti dinners?
She invites him. Every day she leaves,
after
she asks
showing
him.
Showing a little
like,
knee.
I need a gentleman caller.
That's exactly how she talks.
I need love, too.
Pay no mind to these spider veins.
I need a special hug.
And yesterday I saw two homeless people.
You have the best look on your face.
Yesterday I saw two homeless people get into a fight on my bus, too.
Oh, that's so great.
One of them was an ex-junkie, and the other one, like, just getting on from the liquor store.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And she's like, you shouldn't hang out with those guys anymore, Frank. I don't know, they were yelling at each other.
I love Portland.
And then he started drinking.
But Todd,
bus rules.
Todd the Corpse, only in Southeast. Do you see what you missed by living in the suburbs, Tim? Todd the Corpse gives the final word on the Andy Dick story by saying, Rick, it sounds like Dick really got under Bag's skin. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's take a break. We'll come back with Ed McCarthy.
Pause for these messages.
Pause from some 803-733-2970. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Show on AM 970 Solid State Radio. Don't go anywhere. Don't let you-